Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Municipal elections are a month away. Early voting starts today. On Tuesday evening, WFAE, in partnership with the League of Women Voters, Charlotte-Mecklenburg, hosted a candidate forum with over 20 candidates for the at-large council seats, various districts, and the race for mayor. Today, we're sharing highlights from that event, beginning with a conversation about the upcoming transit tax bill with the at-large candidates. WFAE's Steve Harrison was our host for the evening.
This fall, voters in Mecklenburg County will decide whether to increase the general sales tax to 8.25% to pay for a multi-billion dollar roads and transit plan. I'll start with you, Councilmember Mayfield. Will you be supporting the plan?
So as an individual voter and as an elected official, I have not made a decision. I'm still looking and speaking with members of the community. I have many questions. Council has the ability to appoint this committee. We have 9 seats out of more than 20. I am really hoping that my colleagues will see value in us having multiple actual transit riders. For me, 4 to 5 of those 9 should go to actual transit riders, not just the corporations that will benefit off of this. Also, we've heard a lot of people say that it's a regressive tax. When you think of the impact on our lowest paid workers versus someone that's in a very different socioeconomic status, that's saying tax, when they go out to eat, when they go to the store, it's not going to impact them the same way. And with our current bus system, I have a concern that we are not advocating enough for the bus routes that we currently have. Seems every week we're learning of a new route being redirected. I think there's some things we could do right now that could help us move it along. I do want to say, yes, I think we need to have this conversation. This is, for now, a once-in-a-lifetime, because we went 30 years without making the investment. I just want to make sure that this investment is truly going to bring to the community what we're promising, especially in this climate on the federal level, where everything dealing with minority, with women, with diversity is being attacked. How do we make sure the diversity of our community actually benefit those small businesses that we have so that we can see true economic growth?
So Will Holly has just joined us. Will, I'll just kind of jump in right and start with you. I asked a question about the transit tax in November, and we'll just jump right in. Will you be supporting it?
I do support it. The reason I support it because I have to be a bus rider, and I know how it is to be standing in a patch of grass, scared of snakes, ready to run away from anything to come up. And then plus when the bus come by, like, be ashamed because there's no structure there to actually sit down or be comfortable if it's raining. So I do support it. I mean, it's some things and loopholes that everybody really don't understand. But like I say in all my forums, that if they do more informative, like the way we get to churches and gatherings and explain to the people how it's going to work, how it's going to benefit them, I think people will be more on board.
Mr. Lockhart?
Let's go back in time. 1998. The half-cent tax proposal came up, and with that half-cent tax proposal, which funded the Blue Line, we also gave away control of our destiny to the formed Metropolitan Transit Commission. Once we signed that half-cent proposal, Charlotte became a minority in what happens with Charlotte transportation. All the long-range planning for Charlotte. On the Metropolitan Transit Commission, there are the mayors of all the counties of Mecklenburg. Charlotte has a one-vote say, okay, against all the other counties. Now, Charlotte makes up 85% of Mecklenburg County's population. Charlotte makes up 85% of Mecklenburg County's tax base. Now, what I'm pretty sure a lot of people aren't aware of is that this MTC, this commission, the Metropolitan Transit Commission, can amend anything that it does with a majority vote. So what you have now is you have a red commuter line that is getting ready to be planned into the city of Mooresville. Now, mind you, Mecklenburg County has 1.2 million people. Charlotte has 955,000, or as Councilwoman Mayfield likes to say, a million strong. Yes, we are a million strong in Charlotte. Mecklenburg County as a whole has 1.2 million people. So all the other counties combined make up less than 200,000 people. So what we're now forced to pay 85% of this proposed tax plan, or $17 billion, is to fund a commuter line, commuter rail, that's going to go into northern Mecklenburg that is only going to serve parts of Mecklenburg County. And with this new proposed tax plan, this 27-member new Metropolitan Public Transit Authority, MPTA, so basically, we're going to have a 6 in 27 say. I'm telling you, the devil is in the details of the PAVE Act.
Councilmember Wilington?
As you've heard, there is quite a lot to consider. Be sure to put your eyes on it for yourself and make sure that you are aware of what is in black and white, what the facts are, and what may just be conjecture. I also, as Councilmember Mayfield has said, I'm still listening and collecting data. There are a number of things that the communities have said are important to them. Number one, making sure that the communities in the ETJ have strong connectivity to funding to make sure that they're what we call orphan roads, or roads that are not owned specifically by the city or the state or the county, are taken care of. We can do something about that in terms of an MOU strength. Also, when you talk about displacement that we know comes with the kind of investment that goes along with transit lines, particularly along these areas that are within our corridors of opportunity, we've got to make sure that we've got strong plans that make sense, that enable people to stay and live and age in their homes. When it comes to transit in general, we know that it's not just transportation, right? It's economic. And so how do we make sure that those who are impacted positively by the economics of this deal show and are representative of our community at large? We don't have a plan yet for that, and that's extremely important. So those are some of the things that I'm looking at as I continue to weigh my decision.
Councilmember Mitchell, I'll just keep it with you because we're going this way.
Okay.
We'll talk about the transit roads tax.
Yes.
It's on the ballot in November to increase the tax.
I'm a
tax
supporter. Let me just...
There you go.
Being a Charlotte native, I remember it was 35,000 people in this city back in the early 60s. And now look where we are. I will say, I think we're talking about efficiency. Our bus system need to be more efficient. Right now, it's an hour and 15 minutes for you to get on the bus and get to your destination. We can do better. The pass of the transit sales tax will allow then the average ridership to be 30 minutes. We're talking about some of the bus stops we have. We don't have shuttle. We don't have benches. Passing this transit sales tax will allow us to put investment into the bus shuttle. Then, to me, it's about economic and development and economic empowerment. Now we can have a mass transit system to allow you to have more economic and jobs opportunity in our community. And I hear some people say this is on the backs of those less fortunate. It's not. It's on the backs of all citizens in Charlotte, because if you do a sales tax transaction, that's who would pay for the sales transit tax. Let me thank the General Assembly for what they have done, the Mecklenburg County Commission for what they've done. But it's up to you, to the voters. We wanted to put this on the ballot and educate you on how this can change our 14th largest city in America. We're going to be at a million people in almost 2 years. I want y'all to think about that. And every great city in front of us, they have a true public system that connects different modes of transportation. So I hope I didn't offend anyone, but you know where I stand. I'm going to be a yes vote, and hope you'll be a yes vote in November.
Councilmember Ashmira?
Well, James started us off the right foot here. I'm also a supporter of public transportation system, and I will be supporting this bond referendum that's on our ballot. This is deeply personal to me. I'm a product of public transportation. Our family didn't own a car for many years when we first immigrated here. We relied on public buses to get to work, to get to school, and everything in between. It provided our families a pathway to upward mobility. There are so many families that do not own a car. currently our system, it is not efficient, it is not effective. It takes 45 minutes to get from point A to point B. To be the 14th largest city in America, almost a million population, we cannot afford to continue operating like the way we are. We've come a long way. This transit discussion has been going for 5 years. This is first time we have an opportunity from General Assembly to put this on the referendum. Let's look at the results. What your current council member, what your current council and the mayor has been able to deliver. When you look at the red line, this has been a project that was supposed to be delivered decades ago. Finally, we are so close to delivering that because we have now a partnership with Norfolk Southern. So when we look at all of this, you have to look at what your city council has been doing to deliver. We are investing heavily in our sidewalks because this transit referendum that will be on your ballot does not only invest in our public transit, it also expands our roads. 40% of the money is going towards roads. You know, I hear every day from Charlottians that there is congestion and traffic issue throughout the city, no matter what corner of the city I'm in. Let's do something about it. This gives us an opportunity to do something about it. So I hope that you would support it. This is once in a generational opportunity, but at the same time, hold us accountable to deliver on the projects that we are promising.
I'm going to stick to your time guideline. I am for it. I don't think it's perfect. I think we as a council should ensure people sitting on the commission are transit riders. We need to make sure that there is accountability and all of us voters know exactly where the money is being spent. I commit to do town halls and ensuring that you have that information. And we need to ensure whoever is getting and doing the work, the contracts, are people from our communities.
So, unique here. I'm going to say I support it as well. So I've said it multiple times. I absolutely think the time is now for transportation improvements across this city. So we need the improvements. We need the opportunity to invest in our roads. We understand how challenging the roads are for all of our citizens. I rode the rail in tonight. So thinking about how we can improve that and provide more rail for the northern part of the county. And into Lake Norman, I think is important. Anybody who's ever tried to drive on 77 past Lake Norman knows exactly what I'm talking about. So there is absolutely a huge opportunity. We've talked a little bit about the investments. You know, they're often, you know, I've heard JG in multiple conversations talk about the 17.5, it's actually more like $19.4 billion over the next 30 years that are going towards a rail. Well, that's 40% of that money is going towards a rail. 40% of it is going towards roads, and that's something we can continue to improve with new sidewalks and all sorts of opportunities. And we also, I know it's been talked about, but the Better Bus Program is going to be a big piece of that. How do we make the buses run more effectively? How do we make them more appealing? How do we improve ridership? I think that's a huge opportunity. And while I know there's opportunity to look at record, I think we need new voices. I think we need new understanding. I think we need new ideas. And I think you should look at the record. I absolutely think you should look at the records. We have a concern across the city in every pocket that I've visited and every group that I've talked to with the way things are currently running. We need to look at opportunities to improve them. Just look at the news. It's pretty simple, folks. It's not really hard research. So thank you.
We're listening to highlights from Tuesday night's Charlotte Candidate Forum today on Charlotte Talks. You can watch the entire two-hour presentation at WFAE.org. We'll be back in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We're listening to highlights from Tuesday night's WFAE and League of Women Voters Charlotte City Council Candidate Forum. Dante Anderson and Charlene Henderson joined us from District 1, along with Joy Mayo and Warren Turner from District 3. WFAE Steve Harrison spoke with them about the city's efforts to improve working conditions at the airport.
Earlier this year, City Council considered an effort to send a committee to improve the working conditions for roughly 600 or 700 workers at the airport. The motion failed. There was some concern about the city overstepping its legal ability to dictate wages. There was some concern about pushback from Raleigh, but this issue could come up again. And I wanted to ask how you would vote if it does come up again, and if your answer is no, what needs to happen to have that discussion? I'll start with you, the Mayor Pro Tem.
Well, first and foremost, it won't come up again, not in the form that it came up, because it was voted down, right? And so that's just the way council works. If there's a motion and it fails, you can't simply just continue to reintroduce the same motion. However, what I would say is certainly the city of Charlotte cares about workers. I certainly care about workers, and wage workers are the backbone of the city of Charlotte. We know that. And so there are a few ways that Charlotte City Council can help to walk alongside the workers at the airport. The first piece is around work environment. Everyone has the right, a federal right, a state right, and a local right to safe working conditions, to a safe environment. And so if that is not occurring, and of course we've had conversations with the union as well as the airlines, Charlotte City Council can push to ensure that that is occurring. That's the first piece. The second piece is around affordability, because we pull the levers as it relates to housing and transportation and some other services that you pay for that you might not even know about, like your solid waste services and your water rates, right? And so to the extent that we could be great stewards of ensuring that affordability is low and we maintain affordability, that gives more discretionary dollars into wage workers' pockets that they can either spend on their family or they can save it. And the third piece is competition. Competition, quite often, especially in a capital environment, reveals shortcomings or it creates opportunity. And so for those workers at the airport or any worker who feels like they're not making the right amount of wages, hourly wages, and their work environment is different, we can introduce competition. Competition in terms of attracting new companies and different companies that those workers can go and earn a more livable wage. Competition in terms of rolling out workforce development programs that those workers can access, gain skills without having a 2 or 4 year degree to then in turn go and get a better paying job. When you have that type of environment, all companies want to retain their employees. And so you'll see that competition within a workforce environment will raise the tide for all parties.
Ms. Henderson?
So when we talk about supporting our union workers and airport workers, I wholeheartedly support those individuals because, number one, they're barely running on fumes. I mean, barely. They have working conditions that are not workable conditions. And I would suggest that you look at the voting record of those individuals who have voted it up and voted it down. So I wholeheartedly say that union workers are the ones who really have the backbone of our communities when it comes down to the airport. It's so important that we understand that, yes, it sounds good, we talk a great game, but it's all about implementation. And I definitely would like to make sure that we look at those things. I cannot express enough to you, please always check behind anyone, any council member, about how they're voting, and that way you'll be more informative when it comes down to different entities. And we definitely want to make sure that these livable wages become very livable, and let's start challenging the General Assembly or advocating for a better life for anyone that lives in this city.
Ms. Mayo?
Yeah, so as a former teacher, I'm a big fan of a rubric, and you may remember your school day. So I think we need to go back to looking at contracts for any city-owned property or city building. I think we can be more thoughtful of the front end, how we are doing the different bids. With the rubric that I would be encouraging, I would have it weighted toward first, organization and companies that are paying the minimum wage that the city has set, which is $23. Another part of my rubric that would be weighted heavily would also be encouraging companies and individuals who live within Mecklenburg County. So I think we need to take care of home first. I don't think we need to continue to give sources of income to places out of state. So I think we need to be thoughtful of our contracting. And lastly, my rubric would have a heavy weight as well to minority and women small businesses. So I think being thoughtful in the front end, and as a teacher, that's something we're always working on. How am I eliminating potential issues by doing the work and being thoughtful in the beginning? So I think that goes back to the contracts, making sure we're hiring the right organizations that are sharing the same values that we say we hold dear. Then we should implement that with our contracts.
Mr. Turner?
Thank you. I think the question was centered around the airport employees. And I think we're talking about the elephant in the room is American Airlines. I think, first of all, we need to understand that the city of Charlotte, those employees are not city of Charlotte employees. But that does not excuse or remove the fact that the citizens, you all, we own the international Douglas International Airport. That it belongs to the city. So the working conditions in there belongs to the city. If they're, we're talking about working conditions and the environment of working conditions, the city should have some say-so, and they do. The director of the airport also reports to the city manager. So though, from that standpoint, that's something we should directly be involved in. Now, American Airlines is the largest airlines in the world. They are a hub in Charlotte. They employ over 200,000 employees, okay, regional. They're not just local, but it's a regional. So when you start talking about that impact, they pay us for takeoff and landing fees. They pay us for coming in at our airport. And they pay us on taxes and fuel taxes. So they're a huge engine, okay? But that does not remove the fact that if their working conditions are bad, that responsibility falls on the city of Charlotte. We need to make sure that all the conditions on our property at our airport are good working conditions. Now, I want to also conclude with that by saying that when we start talking about, you also alluded to, and I think he was talking about the bill coming back up from the state. You know, they tried to take our airport once before. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is a dangerous move. I heard you talk about transportation in regards to that, Steve. But I would say to you that I have the same concern about a Metropolitan Transit Authority coming over and losing cats. And I hate I didn't get that question, but hopefully you can go on my site and I'll give you that in a minute. So I want to make sure that we understand this. If it does come up again, we have to be prepared. Now, are we putting ourselves in that situation? Because we're bickering about, do we have the authority to intervene in a private company? Should we be telling them what to pay their employees? Well, we don't listen to the citizens of Charlotte. Ourselves, when we come down to our employees, we just raised our rate for city employees to $23. Think about our sanitation worker. They work in the cold weather, rain, sleet, or snow. They get your garbage. Street maintenance folk, they repair your streets. Whether it's raining, sleet, snow, they are there. And we forget that. The guys that collect your yard waste, you know? They see snakes. They you know, we don't think about that. And then when we hear them come before us, it took us this long to get to a decent living wage in our own city for our own employees. I think we have to be an example. We lead by being an example. We made a good move, this council did, and I thank them for doing that. I don't mind spending my taxpayers to make sure that our employees are being taken care of that serve us. And don't ever forget this. Your water, sewer, all those are user fees. You pay a fee. And we need to make sure that when you pay that fee, that you get in the service that you get. I hope that they resolve that matter. I don't believe that the city of Charlotte should be directly involved in talking about wages, but I do believe that we should lend those employees an ear to make sure that that working environment, something that we can control, that is our responsibility. Thank you.
We're listening to highlights from Tuesday night's candidate forum. Both Sari Chakra and Krista Bakari joined us from District 6, Charlotte's lone Republican district. They spoke about how Charlotte should address citywide crime.
Violent crime has fallen in the city in the past year, but here in Uptown, there have been several high-profile shootings and stabbings. A lot of people say they don't feel safe. What direction should the city take to address that?
I think the problem with the stats are we can make numbers say whatever we want them to say. Crime is a problem in Charlotte. Make no doubt about that. We have sections of Charlotte that aren't even reporting the crimes that are happening. So the numbers that we are seeing are very low, probably based on what the reality is. We have got to stop covering up what is happening in the city. We need to pull the blanket up, put a magnifying glass on what is happening, and get to work on real solutions. We have a problem with juvenile crime, repeat criminals in this city. We have got to go to the General Assembly and ask for the funding to reopen a juvenile detention center so we can rehabilitate the youth of Charlotte. We are also needing to look at reasons that this is happening. We have to start working with our school board and getting these kids back in school where they belong so they understand that there is another path to their future.
You know, I have family that resides in Uptown. I have a brother that lives in Uptown, and just 2 days ago we were talking. He's like, man, I don't really feel safe walking around like Mayor Bearden at night anymore. You know, we used to hang out Uptown all the time. When I moved back from ECU, that's when the epicenter was still a thing. And, you know, it was fun. But you're right. Recently, from last year, the rates have dropped. But this past July, we've seen some bad things. However, I will say, I think our city is moving in the right direction. We do have programs now in the works. I think the first respondent with drones is one of them. I think that's really cool. Community policing. And my opponent brings a great point. I think, you know, going to the school board is great. You know, introducing what our first responders do to children at a younger age is actually very, very beneficial. So I think we're moving in the right direction. I would advocate more for that, and that's what I would do.
I'll come back in with
sure.
You. The city council last year voted to spend $650 million to renovate Bank of America Stadium.
Right.
If you had been on the council then, how would you voted, for one? And then would you have done anything different in the process along the way?
That's a really good question, too. I was not involved to know all the details of the deal. However, I do know that Bank of America and the Panthers, Carolina Panthers, and now the MLS team do contribute a lot to this city. They do provide jobs, businesses, hotels, restaurants, bars, everything. It brings in and generates a lot of money. So I would say I think I would have voted yes, only because I know what they do for our city. That business itself generates so much money. So I would have voted yes.
Yeah, again, that's a hard one, especially for a Republican. It was a heavy lift, and I would have to say, without getting into the details, I don't like to answer questions unless I am in the details and understanding what's going on. But overall, from what I saw, I would have to say that I would have likely ended up voting for it because of the economic impact. If you look at the numbers in hospitality and tourism, it brings and generates a lot of money for our city, mm-hmm. jobs, and buzz for our city. That is a big deal. That will end up bringing businesses here and travel here. So that is important to the overall economic impact of Charlotte. So
I've got time for one more. I want to talk about housing. District 6 does not have a lot of affordable housing. is that something that the city needs to try and move forward to bring more low-income housing or affordable housing to South Charlotte?
I mean, you know, affordable housing is obviously an issue across Charlotte. We have thrown hundreds of millions of dollars at this problem, and we still have not made a dent in it. I think that what the city really needs to start looking at is ways that they can do that without burdening the taxpayer. We have to start looking at ways to cut the red tape. The city, within their processes and in their permitting and everything else, they are adding about 30% to the cost of each home once it's built. That is passed on to your renter. It's passed on to the homeowner. That is making our homes unaffordable. Do I think we need more in District 6? I think we need to look at the problem, but I absolutely, what I'm seeing is, you know, we throw these crazy ideas out of changing the single family zoning laws, and it never actually created more housing, more affordable housing. In fact, it's raised the price of housing, if anything. So I think we need reasonable, not wide sweeping policy to tackle this problem.
So when it comes to District 6, I think most people automatically think Myers Park, you know, like Queens Road, like those areas. People always forget about Lansdowne, Sardis Oaks, Crown Point. So we have neighborhoods in District 6 outside of the wealthier neighborhoods. I would say that District 6 needs to look at affordable housing in certain areas. You know, there's other neighborhoods in that district, and everyone deserves to be in areas they want to be in. So, yeah, I would look into ways to further that. I would look into ways to where we can come to the table and have people there. Yeah, absolutely.
Great. That's all the time we have. We're running a little bit behind, but thank you guys so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're listening to highlights from this week's City Council and Mayoral Candidate Forum today on Charlotte Talks. You can find the full program at WFAE.org. More in just a moment.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. Aiming to inspire high school students through an international curriculum and IB diploma program, preparing them for college, careers, and a global community. More at bischarlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We're listening to highlights from Tuesday night's Charlotte Candidate Forum hosted by WFAE and the League of Women Voters. District 4 candidates Renee Johnson and Will Russell and District 5 candidates J.D. Arias and Marjorie Molina took on the topic of the recent settlement with Police Chief Johnny Jennings.
I'll start with Mr. Russell. Earlier this year, the City Council, there was a controversial settlement with Police Chief Johnny Jennings for $305,000. The city's position was that it was not a public document, and then Chief Jennings did later release it. Moving forward, as a council member, these type of settlements are probably going to come up again. As a council member, would you want the recipient to disclose it to the public and make it a public record as kind of a condition for it moving forward?
We do need transparency, and we have to be careful with that because it is a personnel record. And so there are certain laws that you have to adhere to when you're talking about personnel records and settlements. Now, if both parties, the city and the person who's receiving the settlement, agree, then I don't see the harm in that because everybody knows what they're getting into. But we want to make sure that we're thoughtful about that because, as you can see, we've had leaks before. We need to make sure that we're protecting the integrity of the process, but also providing as much information as we can.
Councilmember Johnson?
I think if someone is suing, if they're harmed in some type of way, you wouldn't require that public exposure for them to speak up. If there's been some type of injustice, then no, I wouldn't require that. I mean, there are, you know, I'm an advocate for public accountability. You know that. So we do as a city need to be more transparent legally where we need to be more transparent. But if you're a victim of, and this is outside of that, this settlement, if you're a victim of sexual harassment or something or EEOC or something where you're suing, or then I don't think there should be that leverage or that required plea, if you will, for someone to seek justice for themselves. So no, I wouldn't support that.
Councilmember Molina?
That is a very detailed question. I wish it was yes or no. I think some of what both of them have said would be applicable, right? I mean, in this particular case, we were dealing with a personnel matter. And so just like any one of us in this room, you know, with regards to personnel issues, those things are protected by state law. And so that was the challenge. I can only speak for myself, but, you know, knowing my colleagues, I would also say that, you know, especially for the ones in the room, there are many who would be open to transparency, and I'm one of them. You know, Chief Jennings did give our city 33 years of his life through service, and, you know, the specifics of the details were anonymous during the conversation, but he voluntarily decided that he wanted to release that to the public, and I applaud him for doing that.
Yeah, I would agree with everybody on this stage. However, I do think that we have to have a better process of how the settlement was handled and how that decision came about, right? I think that needs to be transparent and open to the public. I don't think exactly the personal details of the personnel that's being handled, but at the end of the day, that is your taxpayer money being used to settle $350,000 to a high-paying city official, right? I think there's not one size that fits all. I think there has to be a better transparent process on how the money got there to begin with, and also considering the gravity of the situation.
We've only got about 10 minutes left of the program today, but as we neared the end of the night, Mayor Vi Lyles and the candidate she'll be running against in the primary joined us to wrap up the evening.
I am Vi Lyles, and I am running for mayor of the city, and I am really glad to be able to see all of you tonight.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Delta Gwynn, and I am candidate for mayor of Charlotte. I'm wanting to run. I'm born and raised in Charlotte, and my mother as well. My entire family actually is from Charlotte. We've seen it grow to a beautiful city with much credit to our current mayor. It's very beautiful. What I want to do is run for all of Charlotte and make sure that no one's left behind, make sure that everyone has a voice. Once you do your thing in the voting box, is now left up to us to be your spokesperson. So I want to be the spokesperson for everyone, whether it's for housing, affordability, and just making sure that Charlotte is a city for every single individual, every single resident, and it stays the crown jewel that it is. Thank you.
Good evening, y'all. I'm glad y'all stayed too, because it's kind of late. But my name is Gemini Boyd, and I'm running to be your next mayor of the city of Charlotte. And it's two words that I want you all to take with you, and that is fear and change. Fear and change. It is time for those two things. When you see me, don't be afraid of change, because our city is looking for change. It is looking for different leadership. It is in need of having someone that, when there are issues in our city, where no one is afraid to be standing on the front line with you all. It is time for a mayor that's going to be in position that is not just seeking for development, but is seeking for change for people. This is a time right now in our city right now that we are desperately in need of change. Things have happened in our city that we all can applaud our current mayor for. But there is nothing wrong, because I tell people all the time, and my colleague sitting next to me, he'll say I stole this from him, but I always say it. Even Michael Jordan had to retire. So it is just time for us as individuals to recognize that, you know, we are moving forward in a different direction. I want to be the mayor that you can that you can invite to your family functions. I want to be the mayor that not only that I am invited, but I want to host functions for you all to be a part of, because I need to know, in order to make this city the best city in the world, I need to hear from you. I can't do that in the government's building.
Hi, I'm Brendan K. McGinnis. I'm a Democratic candidate for mayor here of Charlotte. I want to thank the League of Women Voters and WFAE for giving us this opportunity. I wasn't born in Charlotte like a lot of the other candidates have been. My family moved down here when I was 8 years old. My father worked at an Exxon gas station. He got promoted to general manager of the Matthews gas station down in downtown Matthews. It wasn't Section 8 at that point in time, but next door was Section 8. My parents worked hard because they wanted to give us a good education. So I actually went to St. Patrick's Catholic School in downtown Charlotte. So my father took the 30-minute drive every morning to drive me there, but of course, school gets out at 3 o'clock, he's working. He couldn't pick me up, so I had to walk as my classmates are getting picked up. I had to walk a couple blocks to the bus stop, take 3 exchanges, get dropped off near Eastland Mall, and then walk that last half mile to our house. We moved away. My parents worked 2 jobs apiece to put us through high school. One of those is my father working a convenience store on the weekends. So, you know, I know hard work. I went into the Marines straight out of high school. Once I got out, I went to college, worked my way through college, working on a grill at Outback for 5 years. So you've come to my house and know how to cook. Once I got out of there, I worked on some campaigns. I started my own financial planning business from scratch, working 8-hour days, going in on Saturdays from 9 to 12, calling people. I built it up over 12 years, won multiple awards, and then I finally sold that practice, or actually passed it on to my partner, to go into a small business. I was happy to do that because I wanted to support my wife and her career. And so now I'm actually a stay-at-home dad. COVID hit, real estate prices in Charlotte went up. We couldn't get that franchise in place. So now I take care of my 5-year-old daughter, my 3-year-old twins. I'm happy to do that. So I think that gives me a unique perspective. I think a lot of times people are looking for a mold of what a candidate should look like, where how they should have come up through the ranks. What I'd say is don't discount me just because I don't fit that mold. I think I'm a visionary, and what that means is I'm able to see things that other people don't. So when you see that in my plan is I use a lot of things that are successful and expanding on those, but I'm also looking to bring innovative and new ideas to solve these old problems. If you're from Charlotte, you got old Charlotte problems, old Charlotte solutions. It's time for some new perspective. I think that's what this election is about.
The city council vote last year to renovate Bank of America Stadium, $650 million. If you were on council then, how would you have voted? And were there things in the process that you would have done differently?
Well, I think that goes back to transparency. I think that's a big part of this election is transparency. I've covered each week of this election, I've covered at a certain phase of my plan. First week was transparency week. We need transparency government. We have a loss of trust. So one of the things that starts as far as the Bank of America Stadium upgrades is there wasn't enough community input. So part of my plan would be having a community accountability commission. Basically, that would be taking members from outside the community, diverse membership from multiple neighborhoods, to review any type of large settlement. So whether it's the Bank of America Stadium upgrades, the Jennings settlement, the dismissal of Patrick Baker, it's looking at those things and making sure that the city council is being accountable for that. What it also do is looking at New York City, they have the New York City checkbook. It's putting in place what I call the Charlotte checkbook, which means having a real-time accounting of where every single dollar goes. So we had a council member, Mitchell, say, going to minority owners or women, female owners. Right now we have no way to account for that, or at least for the public to see that. If you have the Charlotte checkbook in place, people can see where every dollar is going, where those government contracts are going, and if they are hiring people from Charlotte, which we have no way to understand if that is happening right now.
Can you ask that one more time, please?
Just if you were on city council last year, how would you have voted on the decision to spend money to renovate Bank of America Stadium? And were there any things that you, as the process played out, that you would have done differently?
I mean, we're all going to, as you all have been sitting in here, the one word that you have been frequent to hear a lot is transparency. But the first thing that you must do before transparency is hold accountability for yourself. Every day that you get up and you look in the mirror at yourself, I am a servant of you all. So you all need to know what is happening behind the scenes. So before we get to transparency, there needs to be accountability for myself, because you have placed me in a position that you need to know certain things. There are certain things about that contract that I don't know because I wasn't in the room when it was created. But for me, as long as they're moving in a direction that is going to service the people, if people are involved, where there are jobs, being in place with the situation, then of course I am for it. But there are certain things in there that I don't know about that I could sit here and tell you that I'll probably say, nah, I'm against that right there. Because we're all going to continue to hear about the development of Charlotte, the development of Charlotte. That's all we talk about. But the one concept and the one thing that we have forgotten is the people of Charlotte. When are we going to direct our attention back to the people? We are living in a time right now where there is just so much chaos throughout this country. And it is because we are witnessing things that are happening in this country because we are forgetting the people that place us in these positions. So for me, I would need to know more information. But the one thing that I will say that I know for a fact, that if it was against anything that was derogatory towards the people by not allowing them to be a part of the conversation, then I would tell you no. But if it's a situation where job development, growth of the city is there, then it's like a twofold question. But we must always remember and continue to remember you all, because you all are the ones that place the votes and the trust in us. There's three things that you must remember. That is trust, hope, and value. And we must get back to those three things in order to be an even greater city than what we are now.
Mr. Gwynn.
Hi. So I hate to be the Monday morning quarterback and go back, no pun intended, but I would vote against it. I would be against it unless it was truly due to safety concerns or anything of that nature. It's just cosmetic. I would not be for it. We could try to find other ways to fund it. I would not have been for that.
Mayor Lyons.
Well, thank you, Gemini. I really appreciate what you said about how we are trying to do this for people. And that stadium is about people. You think about the community that we're living in. Now, we have a football team that we all had a big parade coming down the city to say we need to have this football team. And that football team has given us lots of opportunities for other people to participate with new jobs. Think about it. You know, I remember the first season where kids were doing the soda fountains and all of that, and they were taking that money back to their schools and doing things with it. So when you have to make these decisions, when things are going to happen, you have to think, well, what started it? And we have a stadium that had to be repaired, and it was going to be repaired or we would lose the team. Now, all of us know that we're a big city now, and big cities usually have these kinds of sports teams, and that's what attracts people. I watch people drive up from all over North Carolina to spend hundreds of dollars in that stadium on a regular basis. And so we need to have a stadium that works, and that's why the council approved the upgrades, because you have to keep up with what's going on. Now, I think it's a choice, of course. I think that there are a lot of people that would say, like, why not do this, make it something else? But there was a decision that was made. We had a full council room of people speaking that they wanted to have the stadium done. And so that's how we landed where we are. And I think that's the appropriate thing. I do not want to lose a team, no matter whether it's the Hornets, whether it's the Panthers, or any of our sports teams. And think about this. They are now having soccer in there. And that, for our Latino community, is exceptional. They are out there every night that the soccer team is playing. And I believe that a city like ours deserves the opportunity to provide entertainment and other activities for people to live.
You've been listening to highlights from Tuesday evening's Charlotte Candidate Forum, hosted by WFAE and the League of Women Voters Charlotte-Mecklenburg. You can find all 2 hours of the event at our website, WFAE.org. Big thanks to all the staff and volunteers for helping make this event possible, and to all of the candidates for joining us. Special thanks to Eric Thiel for putting this show together today. I'm Mike Collins. We'll be back tomorrow with the local news roundup on Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
I'm Steve Harrison, WFAE's politics reporter. From the Government Center in Uptown to the State House in Raleigh, the decisions politicians make affect you every day. And in an increasingly polarized political landscape, it's harder than ever to cut through the noise and get to the facts. That's why I publish the Inside Politics newsletter every Friday, to bring you the inside story. Sign up for free at wfae.org/newsletters.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.